Good afternoon. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, December 30th, 2020. The last Wednesday of 2020, presumably, unless we're in a Groundhog Day situation. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. Global Patriot Radio, 7 days, 7 shows, 8 hosts. I won't explain. If you haven't heard by now, you'll never get it. Anyway, Mondays, Vito and Big Al, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al. Tuesdays, Eric is on with Radio Free Kafiristan. We're here Wednesdays. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, Minister Osama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie with Revealing the Truth About Islam. And Sundays, Eric's back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. And, of course, there are several ways you can interact with our show. You may call. What's that number? 319-527-6706. Already got a listener there. You can also come into the chat. You can listen online, but you can actually go into the chat room if you'd like and interact with others there. Nobody in right now except for me. You can always email me at Gmail, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook. Just look for Hank Jones Polysports. And I'm on Twitter at HPolysports. The best way, though, is to call 319-527-6706. You can listen. You can even talk. Just hit the one. I'll get this little notification that somebody wants to talk. And we will. See, what's the late breaking? Okay. Joe Clark has died. Joe Clark was that high school principal made legendary by the performance of Morgan Freeman in the 1989 film Lean on Me. After retiring from Paterson, New Jersey's East Side High, that's the place where he roamed the hallways with a bullhorn and a baseball bat. He kicked out 300 students on his first day. Anyway, after that, he ran the Essex County Detention House, which was a juvenile detention center in Newark. Following that, he retired to Gainesville, Florida, where he passed away yesterday at the age of 82. No cause was given other than a long illness. In addition to all that, he was the father of Joetta Clark, now known as Joetta Clark Diggs, and Hazel Clark. They were U.S. Olympians in the 800 meters. Pretty good Olympians, as a matter of fact. Rest in peace, Joe Clark, and our thoughts and prayers with your family. You were indeed a legend. Kind of a tragic story out of Louisiana. Congressman-elect Luke Letlow has passed away from COVID-19 complications at age 41, just less than a week before he was to be sworn in for his first term. He was the chief of staff for former Representative Abraham. Was elected to Abraham's former seat after Abraham retired. He announced on December 18th that he had COVID, and then he was admitted to Ochsner LSU Health in Shreveport on the 19th. He was transferred to the ICU last week when his condition got worse. Sad thing, he leaves behind a wife and 2 small children. He's the first member or member-elect of Congress to die from COVID-19. A lot have tested positive for the virus since the pandemic, but he is the first to pass away. He'd previously worked in the administration of Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal as well. It was initially reported that he had no underlying conditions. It's now been reported that he did indeed have previous cardiac issues. Now, instances of electees passing away before being sworn in are rare, but it has happened. The most notable previous to this is probably former NASA astronaut Jack Swigert. If you'll remember, Jack Swigert was the first one to say, "Houston, we have a problem," on Apollo 13. He passed away from cancer on December 27th, 1982, just before he was to begin his first term as a congressman for the state of Colorado. They're the only, Swigert and Luke Letlow are the only ones in the modern area, if you want to call it that, i.e. post-World War II. An additional electee, Charles Vandewater of California, passed away before being seated after his election in 1920. Funny, all the others were pre-1900. Interestingly, all three of those beyond 1900 are Republicans. You do with that info what you will. Kind of for obvious reasons, there's no word yet on who's going to be appointed to fill his seat. I assume it'll be a temporary, then it'll go to a special election. Don't know Louisiana's full laws, but that would be my guess. This is a kind of a sad story, obviously. It sort of reiterates the fact that COVID is real. I mean, for anybody that says, oh, it's a hoax. No. Anybody who keeps saying that people think it's a hoax, that's not what people are saying. I don't know anybody who says it's a hoax. I literally don't know anyone who says it's a hoax. Now, I know a lot of people that have said the reports we're getting about it are misinformation. There are those who say the reaction to it is certainly hoax-like, and people calling it a plandemic. There are elements of that. But I've never questioned whether or not it's real. I've just questioned the politicization and the overreaction to it. Nevertheless, though, the Duke of Luke Letlow is a reminder of how fragile life is. 41 years old, leaves behind two young childs, children. Thoughts and prayers for his family, and may Luke Letlow rest in peace now. I mean, hopefully it wasn't, I hate to say it like this, but hopefully it wasn't, you've heard that COVID deaths are not good, not pleasant, so to speak. The next death I'm going to report, Phil Negro passed away. Phil Negro was 81, pitched 24 seasons in the major leagues, 21 of them with the Braves, both in Milwaukee and Atlanta. He passed away in his sleep last Sunday after a long battle with cancer. Now, that's kind of, I guess, how we all hope we go. But in any case, I imagine respiratory failure is not real pleasant. This is a really tragic death, and I hate to be doing these, but it's in the news. It's Utah freshman running back Ty Jordan. He was the Pac-12 freshman of the year. This is really sad. 19-year-old, last Saturday, he was 19. He was in Denton, Texas. They told ESPN officers responded to a shooting call last Friday and discovered a gunshot victim. It's reported that it was an accidental self-inflicted gunshot. When I say accidentally shot himself, not self-inflicted, an accidental shooting, but he shot himself. That's just awful. He was an offensive freshman of the year. It's just tragic. It's sad. I mean, teammates got to be just crushed, devastated. It's a sad thing. Casey Jones, legendary Boston Celtic. I mean, legendary. Defensive specialist, basically. This is Hank said, a train conductor. Yeah, we're just going to. Hard-nosed point guard, described. He played with Bill Russell. He was on all those teams. He was 88 years old. A lot of people said the C was for championships. He also played with Russell, I believe, at University of San Francisco. 9 seasons in the NBA, won 8 titles. Behind only Russell and Sam Jones. No relation. He later coached the Celtics. Won 3 titles there, 1 as an assistant, 2 as the head coach during the run of success of the 80s with Larry Bird. He was an assistant with the Lakers in 72 when they won a championship. Rest in peace, Casey Jones, at the age of 88. Here's some wonderful news out of Georgia in the Senate runoff elections. An Obama-appointed judge ruled that elections supervisors who removed voters from the rolls on the basis of having moved from one county to another or out of the state, that they removed them prematurely and they must allow those people to cast ballots regardless of their status. Oh, and the judge, Leslie Gardner. Well, her full name is Leslie Abrams Gardner. She is the sister of Stacey Abrams, who, as we may know, unsuccessfully ran for governor of Georgia, and she's now in the business, well, to be polite, she's in the business of ballot harvesting. It's what she does. When Stephanie Gardner was pressed to recuse herself from the case, she not only refused, she also heard no arguments, just issued a summary judgment to the challenge. It was brought by New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer's PAC, Majority Forward. Judge Abrams said she will, in a separate forthcoming order, explain the reason for her non-recusal. This ought to be good. Let's see, politics news. Let's get right to the Nashville bombing. Just get it over with. Did a lot of damage and evidently cut out communications for a lot of areas from Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, due to AT&T being the apparent target. So what do we know? Well, the bomber is apparently one Anthony Quinn Warner, who by all accounts was neighborly enough, but just not very visible. Let's see. He apparently, I'm using apparently a lot because I'll get to that later. He apparently quitclaim deeded two different houses or properties to some woman who is now an entertainment executive in the Los Angeles area, who claimed, initially she claimed not to know him. Subsequently, any and all questions that she's received, she's just referred him to the FBI. So some video suggests, according to people, that a missile was launched from the air. I've seen the video. I don't think it's nearly clear enough to confirm that at all. Other video seems to show the explosion occurring directly across the street from the parked RV. And again, the footage of that looks pretty edited to me, kind of choppy. Various area residents and business people and witnesses say they heard gunshots in the area. Again, no confirmation on whether they were actual gunshots or just precursors to the explosion. Apparently, Anthony Quinn Warner is a gentleman terrorist. Because there's a continuous loudspeaker warning came from a speaker on the RV in the 15 minutes leading up to the explosion. So do with that what you will. Some folks are saying video footage is proof of a conspiracy because the RV used in the explosion was not the same RV shown in earlier footage before the explosion. I haven't looked close enough to decide. But hey, if we're going to have a conspiracy theory, the more proof, the better, I guess. Apparently, the AT&T building targeted in the explosion held anything and everything, ranging from NSA supercomputers to various fraud-inducing voting machines to blackmail evidence of the Biden crime family being destroyed. On the other side, others have said that this might be a good thing, that maybe what was targeted and destroyed was the means to producing more fraudulent elections or more media attacks or more any attacks from foreign influence. And thus, because it was good intent, that was why the 15-minute warning was broadcast. There were initially reports of three people being injured. The subsequent investigation revealed human remains, which compared to DNA evidence at Warner's home, I guess from vehicle registration. But anyway, they supposedly confirmed it was Warner and that he perished in the blast. Other speculation is that he was an anti-technology freak, and that this was an attack on AT&T and their use and further development of 5G technology. Additional speculation is that this was designed to put Georgia and the District of Columbia on high alert to enable continued fraudulent voting in the Georgia runoff, as well as justifying heightened security to head off any pro-Trump rallying and support scheduled for District of Columbia on January 6, 2021. And quite natural, there's a fear that this guy's going to be painted as a right-wing, pro-Trump, weapon-hoarding psycho, so that, quote, if the Dems take both Georgia Senate seats, they'll go full bore, pardon the expression, after the Second Amendment. So of all these things, what are the actual facts? Here is the one incontrovertible fact. The FBI was able to discern within a day who the perpetrator was, what his financial history was, what properties he had deeded away, and what they were told by witnesses, allegedly. Which is, I'll tell you what, this is really amazing, because after almost a year of having Hunter Biden's laptop, 4 years of continuing evidence that the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton presidential campaign colluded with the United Kingdom, Russia, and others in text messages and illegal investigations, FBI was barely aware of the laptop, couldn't somehow put together an investigation of Mueller or Comey or Clapper or Obama or Biden or Hillary Clinton. and amazingly couldn't find conclusive enough evidence to nullify an impeachment investigation, let alone figure out that 33,000 missing emails and warped wiped hard drives might be a crime. So anywhere from 1 to 4 years, they couldn't figure all that crap out, but they were able to figure out all this stuff about Anthony Quinn Warner in one day. Yeah, in other words, no matter what comes of this investigation, if it involves the FBI, there is little reason to believe any of it, let alone trust that what comes out of it is legitimate, or whether it's manufactured or one of those psyops or black ops scenarios. Most of all, that the interests of everyday working Americans is being placed anywhere near the front of the line in terms of priority. Basically, this whole thing stinks. The election, the whole election, the last 4 years of Trump persecution, every damn mass shooting and terrorist attack, the impeachment, the multiple cover-ups on behalf of the Obama administration, the FBI scumbags, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Biden, Comey, Clapper, Brennan, Mueller, Pelosi, Feinstein, and Obama himself, rotten to the very core. Yeah, if you're one of those sitting on the sidelines who justified voting for Biden because, quote, Trump is crazy, or Trump's an ass, or Trump's a racist, or Trump's a dictator, I got news. You're the problem. Not just Obama, not just Biden, not just Pelosi, not just the media. You. Look in a damn mirror. Because you are the problem. You sold out your neighbors, your fellow citizens. You sold out small businesses, hardworking Americans, honest, freedom-loving people who want to become Americans. Why? Because you're selfish, because you don't have balls or a backbone, too lazy to look deeper than some blow-dried pretty boy with shiny teeth or some blonde bimbo with balloons bolted to her chest who tells you that they're bringing you what passes for in their defective skulls anyway. News. People are defective. By supporting them, you have become defective. You're the problem, not the solution. You're the enabler that will let a Robert Reich or a Jerry Nadler or a Chuck Schumer line up your neighbors in a line and shoot them in cold blood. You're the Biden supporter who will watch your neighbor lose his or her business because you couldn't see the difference between a megalomaniac mayor telling you to stay home and wear a mask and a self-serving piece of crap who told you to stay home and wear a mask while he was in the comfort of a private dining room, gnawing on prime rib and torquing down a bottle of $200 champagne. You're the pseudo-feminist, self-proclaimed woke monster who tells people they don't care about others because they want the country opened up, while you or your uber-connected spouse or friends continue to get a paycheck from whatever tax-supported institution is getting this week's barrel of monopoly money that's coming off the printing presses. Face it, man. I know you won't acknowledge it. I know you're a defect, a blot on what was a great country, a sad reminder of how far we have fallen from a country that was basically founded by both visionaries as well as by simple, everyday people who just simply couldn't accept a life dictated to them by people who had no interest in their well-being to begin with. Just remember, if January 6, 2021, or a miracle in our courts, or people in Congress with actual backbone, if any or all of them stand up and expose the fraud in this election, just remember, you were the one that wanted the fraud if you voted for Biden. You were the one that wanted an America defective, power-hungry, morally bankrupt, self-serving manipulators. If that's what you get, well, guess what? When your life goes south, when you finally realize in the grand scheme of things that to them you're just a vote with a mask, congrats, man. Way to go. Oh, you may not lose everything immediately. Brother Tommy says, you know, watch what the market does. It may not happen right away, but you will lose. The only question really becomes, will you even realize it? Probably not. You know, after months of standing in unnecessary lines just to get toilet paper and hand sanitizer, maybe standing in a line just to feed your zombie kids a bowl of gruel won't even bother you. That's a case pity. But if after all this true fraud is revealed, if after all this true justice prevails, tell you what, you can thank those of us who refuse to buy the fraud, refuse to buy the media ass covering, refuse to believe any of you really wanted unity. Well, I'll tell you why. Because we remember. We remember the tweets from Robert Reich. We remember the calls for locking up people who wanted basic everyday freedom. We remember when the left called President Trump a racist and a xenophobe. just like we remember when the left then blamed President Trump for ignoring COVID. Yeah, we remember when Nancy Pelosi went to Chinatown. We remember when she attacked the salon owner for bringing her hypocrisy to light for everyone to see. We remember when mayors and governors told people to stay home. They threatened to prosecute businesses who sought just to survive. We remember when they racked up $690 a person bar tabs at the most expensive restaurants in the country and then did live feeds admonishing us from the comfort of Cabo San Lucas. Yeah, we remember. I mean, look, the bombing itself is tragic and all that for anybody that was hurt. I get it. But for anybody that's sitting here saying, oh, yeah, I wonder what it is. It's just part of the whole scheme of things. I mean, it just stinks. We're not getting the truth anymore. That's what it boils down to. President Trump signed that disastrous bill I discussed last week. But he did also send a memo of understanding to Congress of which items he intended to withhold and why. He's allowed to do that. On the heels of him saying he wanted $600 checks raised to $2,000 checks, the Dem-led House, of course, jumped right on it, approved an additional bill. However, the Senate, particularly the GOP members with a bit of backbone, and said not so fast. Now, they are debating it, but speculation is Dems are trying to force the hand of GOP senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue to use as ammo in next week's runoff elections. On that point, I'm not sure why. Given what we have heard from Stacey Abrams, as well as the half-assed bench work by her judge sister, they're already stockpiling votes. They don't need to stockpile promises of cash. Hey, Global Patriot Radio's Twitter account, I'm guessing Al, because Vito is pretty busy with his own handle on Twitter. Might have been Vito, but it was Vito or Al. Anyway, they shared a story of a Georgia election worker, Ruby Freeman, and her daughter, election supervisor Andrea Moss, literally bringing in boxes of ballots and then scanning the same ballots over and over. Now, all this is on video. Shows that it happened after GOP election observers had left, being told that counting was ceased for the night. Here's the thing. Georgia elections officials and supervisors and state officials seemingly have no answer. And at this point, I've seen no cause to investigate. Go to Twitter and look for at G Patriot Radio or at H Polysports. You can't miss it. And it's really bizarre. I mean, do these people, I don't care if it's Georgia or Pennsylvania or wherever, do they not know or suspect that they're monitored? Do they not know that? For that matter, how do those that are doing all this monitoring, how do they not investigate? I don't get that. Pennsylvania Republican lawmakers, they said that analysis that they have done shows huge vote discrepancies. Duh. They're wondering how the votes were certified by Governor Tom Wolf or Secretary of the Commonwealth Kathy Buchvar. So basically, Ryan says they found that 6,962,607 ballots, total ballots, were reported. Our Department of State Sure System records indicate that only 6,760,230 voters actually voted. Among those, 6,931,000 were counted in the presidential race, including all three candidates and write-in candidates. So it's a difference of 202,377 more votes cast than voters voting. They said couple that with 31,547 over and under votes in the presidential race, it adds up to a discrepancy of 170,830 votes. Remember, they had to certify it right away. Certify it right away. Doesn't that make you just feel happy? From the woke file. Yeah, University of Michigan. Big Ten fans that aren't Michigan fans are going to be puking when they hear this. University of Michigan actually has a Words Matter task force. a Words Matter task force. Yeah, that, you know what that might explain for one thing? It might explain why out-of-state tuition costs $66,000 a year. Anyway, they've come up with a bunch of words that are possibly offensive. Want to hear three of them? Picnic, brown bag, and blacklist. I have no words, offensive or not. I just don't. I literally don't. I mean, where do they come up with that stuff? I mean, you realize, people, that there's somebody sitting somewhere being paid by us, or in our states. Unbelievable. Yeah, well, and of course, let's see, Massachusetts school has banned the Odyssey. Yeah, the Odyssey. And they're trying to make sure that children get no access. Well, don't want to say I have no words, but they're Greek. Here's a good one. Hawkeye Mike shared this on Facebook from the Washington Times. Retired generals say American youth are too flabby to defend the nation. How's that make you feel? It's a group of retired military leaders. They are warning the Pentagon. The group is called Mission Readiness. They want to help the Pentagon to help set up an interagency committee to address this, what they consider a national military crisis. Want them to take a holistic approach to addressing issues, ultimately impacting the ability of the military to recruit personnel. According to the Department of Defense, 71% of young Americans are unable to serve in uniform, largely due to obesity, drug abuse, a poor education, or a criminal record. Holy crap. Understand my rant earlier? You know, in the movie Easy Rider, there is a scene where the characters played by Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, and Jack Nicholson go into a local, I guess, diner, cafe, whatever you want to call it, in Louisiana or Mississippi. I think it's Louisiana. On their way, yeah, because they say the Parish Line. In Louisiana, on their way to Mardi Gras, right before the rednecks beat Jack Nicholson to death. Put a pretty good whipping on Fonda as well. Anyway, after being there and being basically ridiculed by the people there for their long hair, etc., they're sitting around the fire, which they did every night, pretty much getting high, whatnot. Well, Hopper and Fonda would get high. Nicholson would just drink. Excuse me, my allergies are terrible today. Yeah, it could not. Mrs. Hank says it could be COVID since I'm Republican. It's not. Anyway, so they're sitting around and Peter Fonda says, "This used to be a hell of a good country. I don't know what the hell went wrong." That's in a nutshell. Here's Hawkeye Mike has sent me a message about a girl that was forced to leave the University of Tennessee. She used the word, the N-word, in a 3-second tweet when she was 15 years old, outed by a classmate out of spite. So she's basically forced out of college for something that happened when she was 15. I mean, that's what we're getting with our woke moms. Oh. Here's some news. Dawn Wells, a.k.a. Barry Ann on Gilligan's Island. Hawkeye Mike said, just heard that Dawn Wells, Mary Ann, passed away from COVID at age 82. That's tragic. But she's 82, so who knows? And who knows everything that's being attributed to COVID? It's just so impossible anymore to even decide whether these are, you know, whether they're COVID deaths or not. Here's more good news. Chuckie Schumer, he basically wants to transfer wealth from everyday people to Harvard grads. Now you say, how do they want to do that, eh? Well, basically wants to forgive debt, college debt. Now, on the surface, you hear that, oh, they come out with so much debt. Think about this. I talked about this before. The guy that's got, whether it's $10,000 or $50,000, the guy that's got that kind of debt is usually working, usually in an upper income job compared to the guy who didn't go to college or the girl who didn't go to college. Guy working as an auto mechanic or a girl working as a beautician or vice versa, for that matter. So, basically, by forgiving debt, now supposedly Biden's going to do $10,000, but Schumer wants him to do $50,000. Kid that goes to Harvard gets debt forgiven. Kid that scraped to go through DeVry or auto mechanic school, whatever, scraped and scrimped, they're not forgiving his debt or her debt. But yeah, let's give to the wealthy. That's what they're doing. That's what it is. They don't tell you this, but it is. That's what it is. It's stealing from the poor to give to the rich. Incredible. But you know, those are the ones that are going to push it. Pelosi did an interview with the Blitzed One, Wolf Blitzer. This interview, basically, she just came off as just more lunatic than ever. We're not even going to discuss it. Why am I discussing Nancy Pelosi? A high school student in Nevada is suing Nevada schools over leftist indoctrination. That'll go far. So, yeah, so that's what we got going on. Victor Davis Hanson. Genius, basically. Great columnist. This one appeared in the Western Journal, I think. Yeah, it's the Western Journal. Basically said, have you noticed all the things that have changed in media since November 3rd? Remember, I talked a lot about this. Some of this stuff. But how stuff has abruptly changed. Remember how, he says, remember media cross-examination of the president on a daily basis? That's bad now. Media should not be pressing the president on anything. Talks about basically gotcha questions are gone now. Like he says, why ask a president whether he's a traitor or a crook if you can focus on his favorite flavor of milkshake or compliment him on his socks? Hey, remember when you used to talk about how vaccines took years to develop? Now it's no big deal to bring them out very quickly. Now, as he said, impeachment's bad. It was great to impeach Trump, but now impeachment's bad and it should only be the highest treason, bribery, or other high crimes. Any kind of talk of impeachment now is no. Also, remember every pop psychologist, every Dr. Wannabe? People went after Trump on the Emoluments Clause. They went after him on the 25th Amendment. Now, oh no, we don't call out the faculties of Joe Biden. Not in the least. That would be a coup attempt. Do you know any kind of stuff that went on with FBI inquiries? Those are off the table. Logan Act, remember? Not so long ago. Critical. We need the Logan Act. Now, bringing up anything under the Logan Act for Joe Biden would be, yep, treason. Treason. That's what they said. Read them. Look them up. Victor Davis Hanson, brilliant guy. Comes up with some really great stuff, too. Very insightful. Hits you right between the eyes. Pulls no punches. Really enjoy him. Here you go. Oh, this is just more leftist crap. Three former Obama and Pete Buttigieg staffers are again calling for the Trump Accountability Project. Now, if you haven't, I've talked about it a little bit. It's the kind of stuff Robert Reich has talked about. It's basically this: a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Basically, you would be called on the carpet for supporting the president, voting for him. You're an enabler. Not chastising him, not calling for his ouster. That's seditious. So in that vein, EJ Media at Margolis wrote a little piece, Five Reasons I Will Always Resist Joe Biden and the Democrats, and You Should Too. Here's what he says. Is anyone else tired of the media and the left wing telling you that Republicans should get in line and support Biden and stop questioning the election? I am. The race is over, they say. Biden won, they insist. It's time for unity, they demand. Heh, unity? Don't count on it. Joe Biden ran claiming to be a uniter who would work with both sides. He showed he'll do no such thing. All his cabinet picks have only been loyalists and Obama administration retreads. So far, none of the so-called Republicans Biden had considered for his administration have been announced. He won't be a president for all Americans like he promised. But only fools would have believed him anyway. Because I'm looking at you, never Trump Republicans. As it seems clear that the Supreme Court will not involve itself in election disputes, it seems likely that Joe Biden will be inaugurated in January. Even if that happens, that doesn't mean we have to accept the legitimacy of his presidency. Why should we? Are we really going to be lectured by Democrats who repeatedly refuse to accept their own defeat? Stacey Abrams and Hillary Clinton come to mind. So yeah, no thanks. Trump voters put up with a lot over 4 years, and we're not about to forgive and forget so easily. Here are five reasons why I will resist Biden and the Democrats. Number five, Obamagate Russia. This one is pretty obvious. The Obama-Biden administration spied on the Trump campaign over bogus allegations that his campaign had been colluding with Russia to steal the 2016 elections. In fact, according to transcripts of interviews from the House Intel Committee's investigation on collusion, Obama officials never saw evidence of collusion, coordination, or conspiracy. The primary source of the Steele dossier, which was paid for by the Clinton campaign, was actually a suspected Russian spy. Democrats pushed this conspiracy theory endlessly. Representative Adam Schiff claimed for months he had personally seen evidence of collusion. Yet the Mueller report concluded there was no evidence of collusion. Democrats were so desperate to believe that Trump's victory wasn't legitimate, that the Russian collusion conspiracy, a story fit for tabloids rather than legitimate journalists or serious members of government, persists to this day despite it being a hoax. Oh, but how they bellyache now about peaceful transfer of power. They blame Trump for refusing to commit to a peaceful transition. Excuse me, did he say on Joe Biden's, did he spy on Joe Biden's campaign? Spare us the rhetoric about the peaceful transition of power when Joe Biden was part of the administration that abused its powers to destroy Trump as an insurance policy. This next one's really good. Says, seems like a lifetime ago, but over 60 Democrats actually boycotted Trump's inauguration, many of whom justified it out of support for the late Representative John Lewis, who was criticized by Trump after he said he didn't view Trump as a legitimate president, or specifically because they believed Trump wasn't legitimately elected. Don Beyer of Virginia. I will not be part of normalizing or legitimizing a man whose election may well have depended on the malicious foreign interference of Russia's leaders. Lloyd Evans of Pennsylvania. I will not be attending the inauguration. Russian hacking must be investigated, and I do not support the repeal of ACA. Didn't have the repeal of ACA. He didn't need. Barbara Lee of California. On Inauguration Day, I will not be celebrating. I will be organizing and preparing for resistance. So pardon me if I am unable and unwilling to celebrate with the Democrats who went to great lengths to delegitimize President Trump from day one. Number three, impeaching Trump for Biden's crime. The effort to impeach President Donald Trump is already underway, declared the Washington Post on January 20th, 2020. Should have been January 20th, 2017, the very day President Trump was inaugurated. From even before he took office, there was a growing group of leftists determined to find something to impeach Trump over. After a number of failed attempts, they finally succeeded in impeaching him over bogus allegations of a quid pro quo with Ukraine. The one guilty of an actual quid pro quo with Ukraine was Joe Biden, who admitted during a Council on Foreign Relations meeting in Washington, D.C., and he threatened to withhold a $1 billion loan to Ukraine unless they fired the prosecutor who was investigating Burisma Holdings, the energy company his son Hunter was sitting on the board of. He argued that his actions were legitimate because he was carrying out the official policy of the Obama administration to root out corruption in Ukraine. It was a fully transparent policy carried out in front of the whole world and fully embraced by the international community of democracies, he claimed. The $1 billion loan to Ukraine was appropriated by Congress as part of a bill that was passed in March 2014 by a 399-19 vote in the House and a 98-2 vote in the Senate, withholding aid already appropriated by Congress is a violation of federal law. Despite their failure to remove Trump from office, Democrats also promised to continue to target him after he leaves office. Do they really think unity is possible when they're still out for revenge for 2016? Number two, blaming Trump for COVID. COVID-19 came from China. It was spreading from Wuhan, China for perhaps a couple of months before they alerted the World Health Organization. Yet Democrats only saw attempts to link China to the virus as racist and xenophobic. When President Trump banned travel from China, that's exactly what they accused him of. Joe Biden, before flip-flopping months later, criticized the travel ban during a campaign rally. In moments like this, this is where the credibility of a president is most needed, as he explains what we should and should not do, he said. This is no time for Donald Trump's record of hysteria and xenophobia, and fear-mongering. Nancy Pelosi infamously toured Chinatown, telling the country, everything is fine and all is well. When accusing Trump of racism and xenophobia fell flat as cases and deaths worldwide climbed, they decided instead the most politically expedient thing was to blame Trump for COVID-19 deaths. Joe Biden, who now wants, quote, unity, unquote, even blamed Trump for America's COVID deaths. Heck, even Andrew Cuomo blamed Trump for the nursing home deaths that resulted from his own policy. Rather than blame China for being responsible for the virus, the Democrats blame Trump because they needed a narrative to defeat him. Meanwhile, China will never be published. And the number one reason is stealing the election. Number one is obviously the most obvious reason. Using the COVID-19 pandemic as a pretext, various states implemented sweeping changes to change election laws, leaving our elections even more susceptible to voter fraud. On the national level, Nancy Pelosi attempted a federal takeover of elections, including mandating automatic counting of provisional ballots, nationalizing same registration, and nationalizing ballot harvesting. And of course, there's the massive influx of mail-in voting. It was a fraud-prone disaster waiting to happen. As one could have easily expected, there were all sorts of issues with the election, widespread irregularities and statistical anomalies. These are backed up by sworn statements that suggest rampant fraud took place. President Trump summed it up earlier this week. Despite all the evidence, the media dubs Trump's claims of election fraud as unfounded. There's far more evidence of consequential voter fraud in battleground states than there ever was of Russian collusion. After 4 years of endless accusations from the media and the Democrat Party that Donald Trump wasn't really elected and Russia stole the election for him, those who are raising questions about the legitimacy of the 2020 election are being told to sit down and shut up. But, as Senator Hawley of Missouri recently said, 74 million Americans are not going to shut up. And telling them that their views don't matter and that their concerns don't matter and they should just be quiet is not a recipe for success in this country. It's not a recipe for the unity that I hear now the other side is suddenly so interested. After years, years of trying to delegitimize President Donald Trump. But make no mistake, questioning the legitimacy of the 2020 election isn't about revenge. Republicans have been fighting to preserve the integrity of our elections for years and have met pushback from elected Democrats every step of the way. We have to speak up louder than ever now because the evidence is glaring. And if they get away with it now, they will be emboldened to continue. Closes with this. This is a fight we have to fight, regardless of the outcome. We can accept a legitimate defeat, but a stolen election we cannot. Without a proper audit of the elections with dubious results, we'll never know for sure. And without knowing for sure, we shouldn't assume the results were legitimate. It's what I've said before, people. When their answer is, well, it wasn't enough to overturn, when that's their result, their answer, when their first answer is it wasn't enough votes to overturn, number one, how can you assume that? If you admit there was fraud, then guess what? You don't know what the results were. You don't know the legitimacy. Any fraud is cause for revisiting. Here's the last item from politics for now. Student government at Cornell University. They tried to pass a resolution last month that would disarm their school's police. The resolution failed. But guess what happened? Instead of accepting it, no. Anti-police activists within student government worked to expel other members who had opposed the resolution and then held a second vote to disarm campus police when that vote passed on December 10th. Students said racism was employed by the student government members who wanted to disarm police, told numerous white students who spoke ahead of the initial vote that their opinions didn't matter. One student assembly director speaking of elections, speaking at a meeting, told a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, as a white man, you cannot be the arbiter of what is and isn't racist and who is a good or bad person. You will never be the arbiter because you are a white man. Yeah, the old race car. Well, let's get to some sports news. It's a little happier. Not a lot, but a little. A little bit happier. Okay, here's what's going on in sports. There's still COVID cancellations of various things. We'll get to that. College football graduation rates have slid a bit. The gap between white and black players has grown or widened. So you can imagine what ESPN has done with that. It's not good news, certainly, but let's, you know, how much do we really know? I mean, like anything else, they haven't really, the article isn't really clear. Just shows up some numbers. Okay. 2020-21 season for the NHL. They have their COVID protocols in place, their cancellation protocols in place. But more interestingly, NHL is expecting Canadian teams to play home games this season. Yes, they are. The NBA, they're warning teams about obtaining administering the COVID vaccine early by getting to the quote-unquote the front of the line. Don't know what that's about. But Alabama has two players in the finals for the Heisman Trophy. There are four finalists. Devontae Smith, wide receiver, who is also AP Player of the Year, first time that's been done by a receiver in years. Quarterback Mac Jones. Yeah, people have said he's kind of getting the benefit of the doubt because he's Alabama's quarterback. That could split the vote, actually. Florida quarterback Kyle Trask and Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence. So those are your four Heisman finalists. Hey, we got a caller on the line who wants to talk. I believe it's Brother Tommy, so. Brother Tommy, you there?
I am here. And
what's
I totally
up?
Lost my train of thought. I wanted to quickly say something about what you just commented on real quick, and then I'll let you go, but I lost my thought. Oh, no. I was going to say, I know you've got some Hawkeye listeners. How about us bitch slapping the Northwestern Wildcats last night, huh?
3-0 Northwestern. Undefeated in the Big Ten until last night.
That was good, and we needed it. We needed it because after Minnesota, that's not a good thing to lose two in a row. And,
definitely not.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that. My other point was everything you've been talking about, rightfully so, is everything's going so wrong in this world with politics and everything. So we need a little bit of brightness, and Hawkeyes, I think, can look up to the Iowa Hawkeyes. I think we got a good, damn good team, and I think I maybe said it last week on your show, but I think I don't look at that Gonzaga loss as a failure. I do look at Minnesota loss as a failure, but not the Gonzaga loss. But we're looking up. So I'm just trying to throw a little bit of, you need Hawkeye Mike to call in because he's, as you know, he and I are in a group text thing, and Mike's much more glass full guy than I am. I'm a glass empty guy, but I just wanted to say, because I know you got Hawkeye fans on there, that, hey, we're looking all right.
Yeah, I think, I really believe, as I said in the chat today, I really believe a Luka Garza that scores 40 points in Big Ten games is not a competitive. I don't want to say not competitive, but it's not a winning formula. We really need guys like Bohannon and Frederick and Weiss.
You watched last night. I'll tell you, I was an all conference, one of three unanimous choice all conference players in a conference. Granted, not the best conference in the world, but I was that nonetheless. I know basketball. And you did a group text today, and you were absolutely right in the sense that, you know what? You want to double-team Luka? Throw it out to Bohannon. Throw it out to Wieskamp. Throw it out to Frederick. And I'll tell you what, if those guys hit, we're unstoppable. And now I'm going to say something that the politically correct listeners of yours might say is racist. But it's
I don't
not.
Think you have any.
It's strictly an observation. We got five white guys on the court at the same time, and that's not racist. I'm just saying that's why we're not going to win at all, truth be told. But And that Toussaint, I know I we're getting probably too specific, and I'll let you go, but Toussaint, as much as he is a spaz, and he is a spaz, he ignites the team. There's something special about him that I cannot put into words.
Well, he can be a spaz on the offensive end. He goes into traffic.
Correct.
and he overcommits.
Correct.
Himself. He gets too committed, and he has nowhere to go with it. On the defensive end, I still say it, he's the best perimeter defender in the Big Ten.
And that's what's going to kill us from winning it all. By that, I don't mean the Big Ten. I mean NCAA championship is our defense. But you're right. You're absolutely right. You texted it today. He's the only – I mean, they're all trying and stuff, and I blame it on McCaffrey. He does not teach defense for whatever reason, and I do not know why he doesn't. But you're right. Toussaint is a great defensive player. And, yes, offensively is where he's a spaz. Defensively, yeah. he creates turnover. He's very, very good defensively. And he is also good at he's not Isaiah Thomas. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's the next Isaiah Thomas, but because he can't shoot, but he creates. And
yep.
People need point guard, or teams need point guards that create. And he does create. I will say that about him.
Yeah, definitely. And when he keeps it under control, he can, you know, he can. First of all, he does get away some good shots when he drives, but sometimes he overcommits. But when he's a little better under control, he's dangerous because he can get to the hoop. I mean, he's very fast, very quick.
I got one for you. I don't want to go into the minutia because I know your listeners don't get into that. But I'll ask you a quick question and let you go. 5 minutes left in the game. The game's tied. Do you go with Connor or do you go with Toussaint?
You go with Toussaint. That's my personal
opinion. Yeah, I think so too. Although Connor, in his defense, and I've always been down on him, he doesn't make mistakes.
No, he doesn't.
So,
you're right.
Yeah, but I go with Toussaint too, only because he creates, like I said earlier. But Connor, last year I'm like, okay, coach's son? Really? What's this guy doing? But you pointed out, I think on one of your podcasts, or maybe when you and I texted or talked, he feeds the big man well. So I'm actually becoming more of a Connor apologist. But no, I go with Toussaint too. But what you're going to get, feast or famine, you know.
Yeah.
And
well, Connor
told me, because I turned
player.
The game
Connor
off.
Is a smart player. Connor is a smart player.
Yes.
No doubt about that.
Yes, and When you have a father that's a coach, of course you're going to be a smart player. But you told me, because I don't even watch it that much anymore, but I think, or maybe my wife told me that Toussaint blew two free throws in the Minnesota game.
Yeah,
know?
But that was two free throws. There were plenty other.
Well, that's where it's a difficult equation, though. You can't blow those. You know?
No, I know, but I'm saying he wasn't the only one. Other people missed free throws. We were like 55% or 60% from the line. That's not going to cut it.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not only that, we were giving away. You know, I mean, we had a 7-point lead with 44 seconds left. Here's a piece of news that Hawkeye fans aren't going to like. Davion Nixon has made it official. He is entering the 2021 draft.
Oh, I told you guys today that they're both gone. Lindebaum, they're gone. Hawkeye Mike said he's going to stay. Cackard said he's going to stay. Bullshit. You get a $5 million offer, you're gone, and you should be. I would tell my son, take the $5 million. You can go back to college. Take the $5 million. They're both gone.
Yeah. Chauncey Golston is definitely gone as well. He wasn't a shock because he's a senior anyway. You know, people using that extra year, I don't know. But I
saw something today. I don't do the news anymore, as I've said, but I saw something today that said Nixon was a first-team All-American.
He's going to be a consensus. He's going to get his picture on the wall. The wall of honor.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't been following
the closely.
Well,
he's a Big Ten defensive player of the year. He's still an Outland Trophy finalist. He did not win the Nagurski. That went to that kid from Tulsa.
He's the Big Ten player of the year?
Defensive Player of the Year, yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah, see, yeah. I don't follow it as closely as I should, so that's why I shouldn't even call into your show. I just had to chime in on that thing, and I'll let you go. But great show, and hope you know. Hopefully, we get Linderbaum to stay back, but he won't. Trust me. Mike's an optimist. Mike will say he's going to stay home because of what Cacker reports. Cacker's an idiot, actually.
I'm going to keep you on because Mike's on the line here, too.
Oh, he is. Cool. I'd love to
Mike,
talk to
Mike. You there?
Yeah, I am, Hank. I was going to spare you my input this this week, but after Tom called me out, I thought I'd better call in.
Mike,
I
bust balls, Mike. I bust balls. You know I'm not being serious, right?
Right. Well, you know, I know. I like to bust back.
I just want to
set the record straight on one thing. Look, I always thought Nixon was gone. It doesn't surprise me at all. You know,
yeah,
I don't blame him. You know, I mean, look, these guys, it's like the old Jerry Maguire line, right? Show me the money. They've got a tight, you know, few years to earn, right? So they got to get out of there. Now, on the Linderbaum thing, the guy's only a redshirt sophomore. So I don't know what's going to happen. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes, but it also won't surprise me if he decides to come back. But, you know, so we'll just have to wait and see. I don't know. And I don't know how, you know, what if he's going to – I think Nixon, you know, is probably a first-round pick. I don't know if that's true.
He's projected – Kuiper projects him number 10.
Linderbaum? You mean Linderbaum?
No, he projects Nixon number 10.
Nixon. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, you got to go. You got to go. You're not going to do better than that.
Tyler Linderbaum is second.
Linderbaum is considered – Linderbaum's considered one of the best, if not the best, centers in the country. And believe it
pro football,
or not.
Pro football
no,
focus.
I agree.
Pro football,
I agree.
Focus, pro football focus, he grades out highest.
Yeah, and
well,
I'll tell you, let me tell you something
we'll
right
see,
now.
We'll
Light
see
up.
About Linderbaum. He is only a sophomore, though.
Yeah.
But you know, leaving those two aside, and Golston, I pretty much figured he was going to be gone.
Yeah.
The good news is getting Van Valkenburg back. That guy.
No, you guys got to help me out there. You guys got to help
great.
Me out there. Who's that?
Defensive
lineman. Yeah.
Yeah, defensive
end.
Oh, okay.
Hopefully Jack Heflin, you know, will follow suit and come back too, because you know this was his, even though he's a senior, he can come back for the next year.
Yep.
And he basically just got going this year, and it was a truncated season, you know. But
yeah.
So, you know, you get him back and Von Valkenburg back. I mean, they got the nucleus of a pretty good returning defensive line, I think.
You just can't lose two fucking first games is the only thing, and that's what Ferentz's teams do all the time. They lose early. Because I'm telling you right now, I think we can.
Well, they better get their act together
because
their opening game next year on September 4th is Indiana. So there's you better be ready to play. You better be ready to play.
You do not
want to
play them first game. Oh, that's
It's in Kinnick, but you know it'll be a tough game.
What's that coach's name again?
Stadium.
He's done a tremendous job there.
Tom Allen.
He's done a tremendous job.
He has.
Well, Wisconsin won their bowl game today, by the way, guys. But unfortunately, they shattered the Duke's Mayo Bowl trophy. So that's kind of hard news.
Well, good news for the Big Ten, I guess. At least somebody actually played a bowl game. I can't believe it. You know,
I just saw that they have the CFP has finally put in some makeup dates in case anything happens. I don't think those are going to get canceled. I think our bowl cancellation to me is awful.
That's what I was going to ask. Mike will know because I know he falls it a hell of a lot closer than I do. So is it official? We're not bowling against Missouri. Is that official or?
The game
would be over already.
Yeah, it would be. Well, it would be
really play today. Yeah.
I was going to.
I guess
that
I
was
keep
gonna...
forgetting the date. Yeah, I keep forgetting.
And
the
it's
date.
All on. It's all on Missouri. I mean, they were the ones that deep sixed it. You know, they got
let's review our
auspices of COVID-19.
Yeah. Let's review our cancellations. Okay, Michigan had, they said, would have had up to 50 people out. That, to me, sounds like a team that's not following COVID protocols. Just saying. Now, Missouri, supposedly they had positive tests before their trip to Starkville against Mississippi State. They then sent the players home at Christmas because, quote, for their mental health. Does that sound, and everybody said, you know, Eli Drinkwitz, he should be lauded for that. Well, really? Really? You mean, in other words, you've got positive cases and you sent those people home. Wouldn't it, I mean, isn't the whole point that you're keeping everybody together, contained? I mean, that's not exactly containment protocols for COVID, is to send your guys out to the other. I mean, that just, to me, is just, I think they didn't want to be, they didn't care.
Earlier.
No, well, I mean, it gets to a point we've made before that I think this is, sometimes it's almost on purpose. They didn't want to play.
Yeah, they didn't
You know,
to.
There's a lot of teams out there, I think, that were
yeah.
using COVID. They were using COVID as an excuse to punk out of games. And when I say that, I don't mean that there wasn't that there's not an issue with COVID. I mean that they were within the conference or NCAA protocols. They could have played, but they chose not to.
Exactly. Well, Hank said earlier,
and they always tended to be teams that were struggling. You notice that?
Yep.
Hank had said it earlier, and I'm on the fence. It's interested in your perspective, Hawkeye and mine. I'm on the fence about COVID because I actually do think it's a very serious thing, and I know that's not a real right-wing perspective. What is your perspective? I probably asked you this. I just don't have any memory. What is your perspective?
No, I think it's a serious thing, and I think it's a serious thing. I'm not belittling it. The question, there's a separate question from, is it serious? It is. The question is whether 10 months in, everything should be shut down. And let's look at a state like Florida, where you and Hank are from, and compare that to, say, California and New York, where everything's shut down. Is the incidence of COVID really any higher where you guys are at than it is in those places? No.
Yeah.
And yet, how many livelihoods are destroyed? You know, like Trump has said, when the cure is worse than the disease, you know, that's when you got a problem. That's all I'm saying. But I'm not belittling COVID. I lost somebody that I used to know really well from high school, 2 months younger than me. I think Hank knows about this. Just last week, a couple days before Christmas, and in her obituary, it says that she died after a relentless and unforgiving battle with COVID. Well, that tells you it was, and a mutual T. Bodie, I think, mentioned that he'd heard she'd been on a ventilator for 2 weeks, which is consistent with what that description. And I mean, that's just not a good way to go.
Well, they're coming
to terms with the fact that it's really tough.
They're coming to terms with the fact now that ventilators are not the right approach. Unless it's the last stage.
It's the last.
Well, usually, if you go on a ventilator, you're in deep kimchi, as they say.
Some people
get through it, but that's not a good position to be in. Yeah.
No, I listened to a guy who also argued, and believe me, I wear a mask, so any of you PC people out there, don't PM Hank, but I do wear a mask all the time. But I heard a guy last night say, it's like a fart. COVID goes through the mask. It's like a fart in the sense that you smell a fart.
We don't really know. We don't really know the science on this. I mean, they tell us they wear them.
They don't know shit. You're absolutely right.
Up here where I'm at in Colorado, you have to wear them everywhere. And I do. But, you know, whether it really makes that big a difference, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it does or doesn't. I don't know.
We're not going to know for a decade. Thereabouts, you know, just the science is not in. They pretend the science is in because they've got to pretend the science is in because they got to keep us calm. But they don't know. They have no fucking idea any more than we.
Well, you know, we just need to get the vaccine. We need to get the vaccines going. But I did. There was an article out today. I don't know if either one of you two saw it. That was interesting to me because it said that we actually might be closer to herd immunity than you think because there's been like basically 19 million positives tested in the country. The estimate from the I don't know if it was the CDC or somewhere is that there's probably eight times that number. For every one, there's eight that aren't
untaxed
or that have.
So
that's over 150 million.
Yeah.
They said
we
need to get to 218 million, which is 2/3 of the population get to herd. So if we're at 150 million, we're moving. We're a lot closer to herd immunity than maybe is reported.
Right. Hank and Hawkeye Mike, I'm not going to hijack the show. Last question. Would you guys take the vaccine?
I will. I'll do it.
Right away?
As soon as I can get it, I will. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people that have qualms about
it,
but I just want to get this behind
us. Wouldn't you be kind of on the front line since you're ex-military, or did I get that wrong?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that makes any difference.
Hank, would you do it?
I really want to. I got to see some stuff. I got to see more.
I'm not doing it. I'll tell you that. I'm not doing it.
I don't think anybody should be forced to do it. But I think, you know, it's caveat emptor, right? If you make a decision, you know, we're all adults, right, that I don't want to do it, then, you know, I mean, I don't want society to stay shut down because a whole bunch of people won't get the shot. Once I get vaccinated and once it's widely available, you know, the excuses need to end and we need to open things up.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think the worry is that, you know, it'll be like the mark of the beast. You got to show your vaccination in order to be able to travel, in order to go to stores, that kind of thing. I think that's, if we get to that, then we know something's wrong. But, you know,
I got three kids at university.
So I'd like to know, Hank, what's your reservation on getting a shot?
I just don't know how safe it is.
What is it that worries?
Don't forget, Biden said before, you know, we've got to get this done. He's now calling out Trump. And before he said, you know, you can't get a vaccine done that fast. Now he's calling out Trump saying, Trump didn't get it out fast enough. You know, I mean, okay, it's Joe Biden. He's an idiot. We know that. But I mean,
I've told you numerous times, Joe Biden's a moron.
Yeah, but that kind of thing scares me. The fact that we're, you know,
Joe Biden's a moron.
You know, I don't know.
Joe Biden, I promise you this, by 2022, Joe Biden will no longer be president. It's going to be Kamala Harris. That guy,
yeah, I mean,
I've heard doctors say they look at his gait, the way he walks. It's called gait. They look at him and say, this guy is not, he's got dementia. And so I guarantee you, within a year, he's gone. I mean, he's definitely gone. All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think what's happened to him is elder abuse. I think it's borderline criminal. I don't know. I mean, I'm worried about the way this is. You know, on the other side of it, you know, President Trump has pushed for this. So, you know, I trust President Trump in that regard. So I can't, you know, I guess.
Well, Biden at his best was an idiot. You know, I'm going back 12, 15, 20 years. Biden was still an idiot.
Yeah.
He just has connections. Yeah. Hawkeye Mike knows more about it than me. He's a lawyer and all that. But he's got connections. He's got political action committees. You know, he's always been a moron. Every choice he's ever made has been wrong.
Yeah, pretty much.
And his voting.
But again, this is part of the COVID stuff gets brought up. You know, our game got canceled. Wisconsin's went off without a hitch. I think we have the first New Year's Six game tonight, if I'm not mistaken. One of the New Year's Six games is tonight.
Yeah, there is. I think it's Florida and the Cotton Bowl, believe it or not. I could be wrong there.
Yeah, Florida, Oklahoma. I think you're right. Florida, Oklahoma, the Cotton Bowl. Speaking of which, Florida's one of their linebackers went after Oklahoma and really dissed them. So that's going to be two North Carolina guys that are playing in the Orange Bowl. Those two guys that teamed up to set a record for two running backs with 500 some yards. They're both entering the draft. They're both blowing off the Orange Bowl. I mean, I don't get that. And then you guys see the quarterback from Michigan State, Rocky Lombardi, is transferring to Northern Illinois.
Whenever you don't get something, it's really simple. I'm going to give you guys a quick lesson Hawkeye Mike probably knows this as you do, Hank, but whenever you don't get something, follow the money. It's all about the money.
So follow the money.
And they don't want to get injured so they can get their contract.
But follow the money from Michigan State to Northern Illinois? Follow the money from blowing off the Orange Bowl? I don't get that.
No, what happens there? No, absolutely follow the money there. What happens there is they become a big fish in a small pond. It makes their draftability a little bit better.
Right. And don't you think Lombardi, there's something's going on at Michigan State as far as maybe he's not going to be a guaranteed starter if he'd stuck around?
Yeah.
Correct.
I guess he got injured
the guy was like an interception machine. He became kind of an interception machine this year.
Yeah, and money's also somewhat metaphorical, but yes, that's exactly it. If you don't feel like you're going to play, you got to go to a place where you can establish yourself. Northern Illinois is a perfect place. They get drafted.
Isn't that where Jake Christensen went after he left?
No, he went to Eastern.
No, he went to Eastern Illinois.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is not – when he
and
went
it's not
there,
Jake Christensen, is it?
Jake Christensen.
Jake, yeah. No, he went to Eastern Illinois.
All this stuff is just weird. I just don't get why would you – I mean – like I said, I understand it when your season's over the week of Thanksgiving, why guys might decide to opt out of a bowl or whatever. But, man, you're 10 days away from the end of the season to your bowl game. And that's what I don't get.
What's the deal with that Bateman guy from Minnesota? Didn't he drop out?
Yeah, but Minnesota's not even in a bowl, number one. And number two.
I know.
They missed a bunch of games. He probably was like, what the hell with this? I'm getting out of here.
He had actually opted out before the season, and then he opted back in. And then once they were losing again, he opted back out. So, a guy like that, his no big deal. But some of the kid from Florida, the tight end that opted out, again, he's drafted no matter what. So.
You know who he is? You know who he is? He's Noah Fant. He's
really?
Noah Fant. Well, I think so. Tremendous speed, not great size, can give linebackers, make linebackers go nuts. He's good. He reminds me so much because I only watch Florida because my three kids either went there or go there. And that guy is exactly like Noah Fant. He's just got athletic ability through the roof. Noah Fant,
yeah.
I don't know if you've ever talked about it, Hank, but that guy's got such physical talent, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and he's bearing it out. I mean, with Denver, he's just
he's having a good career at Denver so first few years. So it's Hawkinson.
Yeah.
Right? Oh yeah. Hawkeye Mike lives in Colorado. I don't want to be too specific, obviously, but yeah.
We also got Josie Jewell starting at linebacker out here.
Oh, he is starting?
Yeah, he's been starting.
That's all about heart. Josie Jewell's got heart. It's kind of he reminds me of Garza, who has become, and I know I'm getting tangential here, but Garza has become my favorite Hawkeye player ever. I watched it last night. And he beat a point guard who had a head start on him. It might have been Toussaint. I forget who. He beat him down on defense, running back after, a missed shot. That dude has such heart. It's ridiculous.
Well, Tom, you're too young to remember, although I know Hank does. At least I think you are. Maybe not. He's my second favorite all-time Hawkeye. He is, Luka. But my first
who's your favorite?
Going to be Ronnie Lester.
Yeah,
I missed Ronnie.
Oh, man, that guy, before he got injured, the guy was a Gale Sayers on the basketball court. He really was.
Oh,
I mean, that's
Hank
the analogy
says
I made.
Hank Magic Johnson said Ronnie Lester was the toughest
that's what
guy he ever played against.
To, yeah.
He was the best player he ever played against.
I was in basketball, Hawkeye Mike, growing up. And my basketball coach, everyone was talking about Magic Johnson. And I did not follow it in the sense of following it. But I remember my basketball coach saying, no, the best, before he got injured, as you pointed out, the best point guard in the Big Ten, it would have been like 1980 or thereabouts, he said, was Ronnie Lester. He said he was phenomenal.
Yeah, he unfortunately he had two knee injuries in the same season. You know, he had that injury early in the season. He missed a lot of games, and he came back. And then, you know, he got hurt against Louisville, and that was never going to, you know, he just never.
Did he sniff the pros? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Did he sniff the pros?
I think he was drafted by the Trailblazers, but the Bulls traded for him. The Bulls had drafted Kelvin Ramsey out of Ohio State. That was a trade. I actually saw him play up in Milwaukee my freshman year. But, yeah, he just wasn't the same after that injury, the second injury. I mean,
yeah,
actually had a career. Wasn't he a long time, like, worked in the Laker office? He's like an exec for him for a long time.
Yeah. But,
favorite was always, until Garza, was always B.J. Armstrong. But Hawkeye Mike points out, and he's right, Lester was before my time, so I'm not going to root for someone that I've never seen play, or say he's the best that I've never seen play.
You can see a glimpse of him, Tom. Go Google the Final Four game. In the first 10 minutes before he goes down, he forgot about his injury, and it was what caused him to get injured. But you watch, he scored like the first 10 points Iowa had.
He was just kind of dueling
with Darryl.
Down in the Final Four game. I did not.
Yeah,
know that.
They made the Final Four. They beat Georgetown to go to the Final Four. Then their first game against Louisville,
Al McGuire, I'll never forget. Al McGuire said, "I thought Iowa had a real chance to win it all until Lester went down."
The one that we blew.
We'll never know.
I am not a Tom Davis hater, but Hank and I were at a bar in a city, and we had a 22-point lead, I think it was.
On Vegas.
And we lost to UNLV. We're talking BJ. We're talking Horton. Talking Marble.
Yeah, but that's when those guys were all sophomores.
Basketball history.
That was when those guys were all sophomores. Other than, I mean, like BJ and Armstrong, BJ and Marble and Horton.
Bobby Knight literally came out. And Bobby Knight was always,
Iowa had Indiana's number that year, too. If they'd played Indiana in the final, Iowa would have beat
them. Bobby Knight said, that was my point, Hawkeye Mark. That was my point. Bobby Knight publicly came out and said, which coaches do not do. He's like, I'm glad UNLV won because they subsequently, Indiana won the championship. He's like, I did not want to play Iowa. I mean, that was a team that should have won the national championship. And I don't blame Dr. Tom. I don't blame him
It was a bunch of young guys. Vegas got hot in that second half, and we panicked.
We floated down.
This guy named Gerald Patio, who I'll never forget. The guy was knocked in everything in the second half.
Patio couldn't miss.
He was unconscious.
He actually was still in there.
But you do not slow it down. If you have a game plan, you do not slow your game plan down.
Nope.
We were
fast-paced, and then we slowed it down,
went into Dean Smith-like bullshit, four-corner offense, and that's what killed us. And there's where you can kind of blame Dr. Tom, but I give him a pass. Hank and I saw Dr. Tom once and seemed like a real genuine guy. So I give him a pass. But
he's a good guy.
So, okay, guys, I'm going to cut it short so I can sign off here and give some final thoughts. But it was good. Thanks for listening in. And I'm going to just mute you guys. I'm going to keep you on air, but I'm going to mute you.
You got it.
Okay. Happy New Year, by the way. I'll talk to you guys later. Okay, let's give some final thoughts on this final show of 2020. You heard us talking about COVID being used as an excuse. Missouri, folks, literally, and I hate to rail like this, but Missouri knew they had COVID positives before their last game when they went to play Mississippi State. So they knew that. And yet their coach sent their players home for Christmas break. Now, most schools don't. Iowa players point out, I haven't been home for Christmas in 5 years, some of whom were saying. Why? Because, one, there's protocols. There's game preparation. But there's also COVID protocols. Sending your guys out to the various ends of the country, one, endangers their families, I would think. I think some of these guys have vulnerable family at home. Number two, it takes you out of your quarantine and your isolation. I mean, as long as you're quarantining and isolating together in the same place, you have a much better handle on it. So what happened? They had guys come back testing more positives. You had guys, they literally, Iowa didn't find out about it until after practicing on Sunday. But Missouri, did they even practice? They got back and were right away blowing positives. That wasn't smart. It just seems to me that schools deserved better. Schools deserve better than to have this happen, to have late cancellations of bowl games. It's just not fair to the schools, to the ones that are really sticking with the protocols, doing their due diligence. Now people say, well, you know, Iowa had some tests, and they were, yeah, and they what? They quarantined and they isolated in Iowa City. Other schools had it. Nobody was immune from it. But, man, follow the protocols. You know, Michigan, our other canceled game, 50-some positive tests. That's not a team that's observing protocols, folks. It's just not. These kids sacrifice a lot already, and they sacrifice Christmas. They sacrifice Thanksgiving. It's really not fair that some schools just use it as an excuse, just figure they didn't have to stick with it. It's just not right. It really isn't. So, you know, think about that. Now, COVID's real. We talked about it. You heard us talk about it. COVID's real. It's not the point. The point is, if you're gonna have protocols in place, make sure people are following them. I would even say, if you're living in an area that requires masks, wear a mask, especially if a business requires it. You know what? It's their business. It's their livelihood. But don't take everything as gospel all the way. If we're still wearing masks 6 months from now after we've got this, you know, vaccine, yeah, we need to question it. You know, guys like Bill Gates and Fauci are saying, oh, we'll have to be wearing masks for a lot longer. Really? Really? Then what was the point of developing a vaccine so quickly? What was the point? If we could have brought one to get out later that we knew was going to be a lot more effective. Yeah, we're hearing the anecdotal stuff of some people having reactions. Typical. And that's going to happen 10 years from now. But when it's just a never-ending thing and there's no end in sight, you know what? People were willing to put up with that first couple weeks of let's be safe here. It's when it kept getting extended. And when the people making the mandates didn't observe the mandates. So, yeah, that's why we question it. We don't question, folks, we don't question this stuff because we're anti-government. We hate everything. That's not the point. What we question is the motives, the methods, and the hypocrisy. Folks, it's been a rough 2020, no doubt. But at the same time, there have been some highlights, even for the Hawkeye football team. You know, they started off with 2 losses. They won 6 in a row. Saw development of some players. You see one going to the pros early, a consensus All-American. That's a great accomplishment. We've seen a basketball team that, yeah, 2 losses, but you know what? They're in a tough league. But you've seen players develop. You've seen other schools. You saw Coastal Carolina. Now, they lost their bowl game, but you saw a team sort of keep a semi-darling going undefeated during the regular season. We've seen an Iowa State team even. I don't think they deserved a New Year's Six bowl, but you know what? One of their best seasons ever. One of their players, Breece Hall, All-American. That's an accomplishment. Politically, I don't know. It's been rough. We've seen an election probably full of fraud. But by the same token, there are those we're seeing. Seeing people that are willing to step up, willing to step forward, willing to question the process if they think it's fraudulent. That's what it's going to take. Okay. Bowl season is obviously upon us. Next couple of days, we're going to see some New Year's Six bowls in the college football playoff. Enjoy it. Let's hope they get through these. And, hey, have a safe and happy New Year. And with that, I will send you off with a pretty awesome tune from Jeff Beck called Head for Backstage Pass. That's, of course, if I can find it. Here we go. Folks, have a good night. Happy New Year. Thank you. Right, folks. Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.